From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on November 12th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. On this episode of The Lead, we get some final election 2024 numbers, data. We look at priorities from Republicans in the Statehouse up to Congress, and the Russ McKinney has a piece on one such item, the state's growing energy needs. We also look at some other South Carolinians making moves and who is not joining a Trump administration from our state. The Lead loves hearing from you. That's why we have set up a voicemail box at 803-563-7169. You can give us a call there, give us a shout. You know, who would you send to the administration? No, I'm not going to be press secretary. I love you guys too much. But let us know, 803-563-7169. Don't mind the old greeting. Let's start off with some Election Day 2024 stats per the South Carolina State Election Commission. The state saw record voter turnout of 2.5 million, well, approximately 2,557,000, thanks to a new early voting record of 1.4 million, well, approximately 1,472,000, and 977,000 folks who voted on Election Day itself, as well as 108,000 who voted absentee. So breaking it down percentage-wise, that's 58% of voters in our state voted early.
Wow.
And 38% cast their ballots on Election Day.
Wow.
That participation rate was 76.75%, folks. So very good. Close to what Howie said. He said 78, but that's close.
Wow.
So again, record 2.5 million voter turnout. Way to go, South Carolina. Democracy wins. At the end of the day, democracy wins, guys. Looking ahead to the next couple weeks in the Statehouse this month, starting next Monday, there will be several days of judicial vetting taking place for judges under the Judicial Merit Selection Commission for spots from the State Court of Appeals down to family and circuit courts. Candidates are vetted by the JMSC, and then legislators will vote on the qualified nominees later in the session. We will also see the Statehouse get their respective chambers in order ahead of the session that starts in January. I'm not being metaphorical here, people. They are going to get their chambers in order. We're talking about there's actually been some renovation work, including new carpet in the House chamber.
Nice.
Updated cameras in the Senate.
Nice.
And more work to the second floor lobby, which is a high traffic spot during session, Tuesday through Thursday, January through May.
Nice.
Hopefully they got some new chairs in the lobby because those things are a little ratty. They could be reupholstered, but they've been loved. Now, the House returns on December 2nd for its organizational session, and the Senate returns on December 4th. Members of the state's Electoral College will meet on December 17th. There will be plenty of new faces in both chambers, including Senate District 17, where Republican Everett Stubbs unseated Democrat Mike Fanning by 29 votes. Fanning has conceded the election, foregoing an automatic recount. There is an automatic recount that will take place at 3 p.m. on Thursday for Senate District 29, where Republican J.D. Chaplin leads 22-year incumbent Democratic Senator Gerald Malloy by 287 votes out of almost 50,000 votes cast in that district in the PD. Because that difference represents a margin of less than 1%, an automatic recount is triggered. The belated trigger warning there, folks. Unless one of the candidates concedes and waives the recount, like we saw with Fanning. House Republicans are set to meet on Thursday for their caucus meeting, and we'll hear from leadership following that. According to a letter sent to the House Republican caucus, initial priorities for the next year include funding to cover Hurricane Helene costs, lower income taxes, cut excessive regulations, and also trying again with the school voucher program that the state Supreme Court found unconstitutional this summer. Infrastructure funding will continue to be a priority, as will dealing with liquor liability insurance premiums and public safety priorities, including curbing the surge of illegal immigration. We're still looking to both parties and the Statehouse for more detailed priorities, but one that has been working in the background for several months deals with the future of energy needs, markets, and regulations in our state. And the Russ McKinney with South Carolina Public Radio has this report.
When the General Assembly starts a new session in January,
it will once again confront the challenge of trying to ensure the state's future energy needs will be met. The challenge is clear. South Carolina's population and economic sector is growing fast, so fast that state leaders and utility executives are concerned that the need for energy may outpace the utility's ability to generate enough to meet demand. Mike Callahan, a senior vice president with Duke Energy, recently told a special Senate committee, which is trying to come to grips with the issue, that Duke, as well as other utilities, are at a critical point in planning for a reliable energy future.
Duke Energy needs to build and enable large amounts of new generation quickly to keep up with the success our state is seeing in economic development and growth. We need to do this at the same time we are retiring generation that is reaching the end of its economic life.
While the focus is on the future, the collapse of the V.C. Summer nuclear project back in 2017 lingers. That's when two new nuclear generating stations under construction in Fairfield County were abandoned. State-owned utility Santee Cooper and Dominion Energy's predecessor SCANA walked away from the project after spending $9 billion in passing along parts of the bill to their customers. Now, Dominion and Santee Cooper want to partner again on a huge new natural gas plant in Colleton County. As a state-owned utility, Santee Cooper needs the legislature's blessing to enter into the partnership with Dominion. While the project is expected to be approved, Edgefield's Shane Massey, who chairs the Senate panel handling the energy matters, says there are concerns about customers being asked to pick up much of the cost of a new gas plant while still paying for the abandoned nuclear project.
If we're still looking at a scenario where customers, Dominion, Santee Cooper customers, are going to be paying for two power plants the same way we've always done things, then we're going to have some problems with that.
To the surprise of many, the need for more energy has led to renewed interest in the V.C. Summer site, some 30 miles north of Columbia. Beaufort Senator Tom Davis, a member of the Senate Energy Panel, suggests at least looking for a possible new operator for that site.
I don't understand the sense of reluctance that there is. Maybe it's a hangover from 2017 and the fact that we got screwed, and maybe we're still upset about that. But we need to be clear-eyed about this. I mean, we have an asset in the ground that, by at least preliminary analysis, says is still usable.
Dominion and Santee Cooper still own the V.C. Summer site, but so far haven't publicly expressed any interest in reviving the project. According to the three major utilities that serve South Carolina, large commercial users, such as data centers, are helping to drive the increased demand for electricity. Some senators seem leery of the utilities building new generation to meet the demands for data centers, which will have to be paid for by all of its customers, including residential and other industrial users. Frank Knapp is president of the South Carolina Small Business Chamber of Commerce.
If they are driving the need for building costly gas plants just so they can get the power, the other consumers don't need to be subsidizing Google and Microsoft so that they can make more money. They ought to be paying their own way for producing energy.
Under current state law, utility companies are required to provide electricity to anyone or any company located in their particular service area. A new Senate energy bill is expected to be ready in January for the 2025 session. The House passed a similar measure in 2024, but the Senate was unable to consider it before heading home in May.
Well, it's always great to hear Razan here. You can find that report and more at southcarolinapublicradio.org. Some more state news. Jeffrey Collins with the Associated Press reports that the state Supreme Court has not set a date for the state's next execution after lawyers for four inmates out of appeals asked them to postpone deaths until after Christmas and New Year's. The justices typically issue notices on Fridays because it gives the maximum amount of time of 28 days to prepare for the execution, which, by law, is to be carried out on the fourth Friday after the receipt of such notice. The Supreme Court also promised in August to space out the executions in five-week intervals to give prison staff and defense lawyers, who are often representing several condemned inmates, time to handle all the legal matters necessary. That includes making sure that the lethal injection drugs, as well as the electric chair and firing squad, are ready and researching and filing last-minute appeals. Let's head up to Congress, where the House and Senate return today after being off for the month of October and first week of November for the election recess. And so begins their eight-week lame duck session. We're still waiting to see what the official balance of power will be in the House, but that hasn't stopped House Republican leadership from already taking a victory lap. During a press conference on Capitol Hill on Tuesday, House Speaker Mike Johnson, who is expected to hold onto the gavel by a slim margin once the results of about 14 more House races are called, was already agenda setting for the new session next January. He said that Congress will be ready on day one compared to Trump's first term.
Republicans in the House and Senate have a mandate. It's true. It was a decisive win across the nation. The American people want us to implement and deliver that America First agenda. And we have to do that while we have that energy and that excitement beginning on the very first day of the Congress in the new year. It's clear the American people do want secure borders. They want to prevent terrorists and criminals from entering the country. These things are common sense. They want and deserve lower costs for groceries and gasoline. They want us to project strength on the world stage again and not the weakness that we have projected for the last 4 years. They want an end to the wokeness and the radical gender ideology and a return to common sense in our children's classrooms and corporate boardrooms and government agencies. And we're going to ensure all that's true. This leadership will hit the ground running to deliver President Trump's agenda in the 119th Congress, and we will work closely with him and his administration to turn this country around and unleash, as he says, a new golden age in America. This leadership team standing behind me has been preparing for this moment, and we are ready to deliver on America's mandate in the next Congress. When President Donald Trump won the presidency in 2016, we all look back and recognize that the Republican Party was not fully prepared for that moment, and precious time was wasted in the beginning of that Congress. I know it well because that was my freshman year in Congress. We began in 2017. We are not going to make those mistakes again. We will be ready on day one. We are prepared this time. And as we wind down the 118th Congress, we'll be ready to take the ball and run full speed in the 119th Congress that begins in January. The only way we're able to work quickly is because we have unified control of the Congress, both chambers now and the White House, beginning January. And I want to congratulate all our Republican incumbents who worked so hard to ensure their reelections and our new members who helped us to keep this House majority, especially a couple of new members that flipped districts from red to blue. Now, as we sit here this morning, we're still watching a number of races. We have races still pending in Alaska, Arizona, California, Maine, Ohio, and Oregon. And we're going to ensure that every single legal vote is counted in those races. So while we're completing the work of this Congress, we're shifting gears and preparing for the next Congress. We're also still in campaign mode in some sense and awaiting the final outcome of these races.
That was House Speaker Mike Johnson there. Trump will also be on Capitol Hill Wednesday before meeting with President Joe Biden in the Oval Office at 11 a.m. 5th District Republican Congressman Ralph Norman, who is a conservative member of the House Freedom Caucus, told the Associated Press, quote, "Trump's going to deliver his deportations, the drilling, the wall. It's going to take all of us getting together," quote. Johnson needs a simple majority of the GOP caucus to back him Wednesday to become the party's nominee as speaker, and then he will need a 218-member majority in January to retain the gavel. Over in the Senate, Republicans are back in power with a 52-48 margin after they flipped West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Montana Senate seats. And the fight to be the majority leader, replacing Mitch McConnell, has been underway ahead of elections, with president-elect allies pushing for Florida Senator Rick Scott in a three-way race for the top spot. Democrats also held seats, including in Arizona, where Ruben Gallego replaced independent Kyrsten Sinema. Nevada incumbent Senator Jackie Rosen narrowly held on, as did Wisconsin's Tammy Baldwin. Alyssa Slotkin also narrowly won the Michigan Senate seat following Debbie Stabenow's retirement. So Senate Democrats, who also run statewide in these races, outperformed Vice President Kamala Harris in those key swing states that she lost. Kind of brutal right there. Senator Tim Scott, our own from South Carolina, formally made his bid for the National Republican Senatorial Committee, which is the fundraising arm for Senate Republicans. The prominent position puts him in a leadership role ahead of the 2026 midterms, which may be difficult for Republicans based on who is up for re-election and how Trump governs. Scott is one of the Senate's best fundraisers, and this role keeps him connected to the big money world, baby. Maintaining a majority in 2026 will be key for Trump and would be a big accomplishment for Scott. He's also set to become chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, of which he is currently the ranking nominee. Senator Lindsey Graham is up for re-election in 2026, and while he will undoubtedly face a primary challenger or two, as he always does, those folks won't have President Donald Trump flying in on Air Force One to rally for Graham, who has become one of his most loyal Senate allies, advisors, and messengers. Of course, this is if everything holds steady. Graham met with Israeli President Isaac Herzog, who was in town Tuesday, saying goodbye to President Joe Biden. President-elect Trump stated the other day that he will not be bringing back a few members from his first administration in any capacity, including former Secretary of State and CIA Director Mike Pompeo and former United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley, who ran against him in the presidential election, dropping out after Super Tuesday in early March. A little fraught friendship right there. Now, Haley's political future is up in the air at the moment, with many wondering what she could do next. Right now, she's still hosting her radio show on Sirius XM on Wednesday mornings. She's a fellow at the Hudson Institute, a think tank in Washington, and serves on several boards. Now, Haley tweeted on Saturday, "I was proud to work with President Trump defending America at the United Nations. I wish him and all who serve great success in moving us forward to a stronger, safer America over the next 4 years." Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. I'm talking about myself and A.T. Shire, the producer.
Oh, what a cool, calm, collected intro
right
there.
Oh, no, I'm just playing today's smooth jazz hits.
As the producer of this show, I love when you get really, really quiet, quieter.
Whisper.
It's so good.
It signals to the listener that I'm having an intimate level.
Just whisper. It's just me, Gavin.
Hey,
whispering
in your ear.
Turn it up.
It's going to be loud,
but turn it back up.
I love doing post-production volume changes. It's one of my life's passions.
I have to show that I am engaging them by modulating the volume of my voice.
Yeah, if Gavin could just talk at a very cool, calm, collected negative 6 dB all the way through, this producer would love it. Yeah, he's put on the Ritz now, guys. He's put on the Ritz over here.
That's not how I do.
It's like us putting on the Ritz right now. Anyway, Gavin, you put on the Ritz. We got a call back from Andrew, who was working the polls. So are you ready?
Yeah, cool cat. Please make him stop, folks.
He won't stop putting on the Ritz.
Hey, guys. This is Andrew checking back in after I worked at the polls yesterday. So as you guys predicted, turnout was pretty light. We had a lot of early voting, so not too many people came in. You know, everyone who came in was happy to be there, happy to see no lines. Everything went smoothly on that front. You know, no issues about people's attire or anything like that. I will say we did have a fellow poll manager tell voters without evidence that the machines were switching votes on them. So that was a bit of an issue. Not really sure how much else to say about that. But other than that, overall positive experience. So thanks so much. Take care.
Andrew, thank you for calling us back. Glad to hear about your poll management experience.
Yeah.
Also a little concerned about the fellow poll manager telling folks without any evidence, because we know it not to be true, that the machines were changing people's votes.
Gavin, he's upset. Gavin's a little bothered by it. Andrew, I'm honestly a little happy that you got a small taste of the fun stuff, you know?
We all need to go manage the polls. I'm hoping that was reported and people can see when it prints out your ballot. That it's not changed
it
on you.
It says it all there.
And when you put it in the reader,
it says it all there.
That doesn't change it either.
I'm just glad you got a little bit of that local color. You know,
what
like
a great taste of America.
I'm sure every poll worker that came out was like, I'm going to experience something crazy today. And
call was inside the house.
The call was coming from inside the house. Yes, exactly right. So, yeah, I'm glad you got a little bit, like a very wholesome amount of crazy.
If a poll manager told me, oh, by the way, that machine's going to change your ballot. Okay, what's your name and badge number, sir? Put the gun on the table. You're off active duty.
Give me your badge and your gun,
sir. I said, give me your badge and your gun. I'd be like, you just told the wrong bleeper. Mother bleeper.
I'm a mother bleeping podcast host, okay? You just told the wrong podcast host.
I've been
host
recording this. The whole... Well, actually, my issues with poll workers, unfortunately, have been this election alone.
They all recognize you. They all want autographs.
God, that'd be so helpful. One or two has, thank God. But for the most part, it's like that they we need to work better with the SC Election Commission and the South Carolina Press Association, because especially when you roll up to a polling location with a video camera like myself, mm-hmm. you know, you already see a sign that says no photos, but we are allowed to take photos and video of you. I'm not going to hover over the back of you and see your ballot. That's the whole thing. We stand in areas so you can't see ballots. You can't obstruct anybody. You know, it's just we're just there watching and witnessing
I put this public place. I put all that creepy music under you when you were talking about this in the other episode. Go back
and listen. It's just like, but I'm like, okay, it's just a chilling effect that it's having on us, and it's not good.
So no, yeah.
We're going to try and fix that. I know everyone's all anxious all the time, but... You know, we're here to document this as well.
There's no reason to feel any nerves knowing that Gavin is always lurking around the next corner. It's, always lurking, it's always watching.
If you have nothing to hide, what are you hiding?
Yeah.
Okay, why are you hiding?
Yeah, show me your hands. Show me your hands. What's in your pocket?
Open the door.
I love the idea of like creepy Gavin, but he's really just sort of doing his job.
And that's why it's so hard. Like, you really have to put on the charm. Like, I think I might have said this in a previous Why Now, where I'm like, usually not like the most outgoing person or happy person.
But at work.
Yeah, you got to do it. Like,
you don't talk about the second hat.
And it's not me trying to pull one over on you, but I'm just, you're smiling more and you're trying to be reassuring mm-hmm. and show people that you are caring and being honest with them, because people can really detect, you know, mm-hmm. if you're like, you're trying to
pull the BS meter.
But that comes back to me being, you know, back to being a newspaper photojournalist. Like, we'd have days where you'd have to go feature hunting because mm-hmm. we needed some photos to fill the paper. You know, it's like, we don't have as many news articles. Go find some fun slice of life photos out there.
People like pictures. So they don't like around. Words. They like pictures, so words.
We would drive around, you know, me and other photographers, and you'd see someone doing something outside their house, or like on a playground or doing something like that. So you really had to perfect your approach to people mm-hmm. because you're like, I can't come back empty-handed here. And I need you to say
yes. I need
yes.
these five pictures of Spider-Man. I'm going to lose my job.
Sometimes you'd do like the shoot first, ask questions later if you're far enough away. Other times you'd be like, hey, I'm here. Just act like I'm not here, which is impossible. But like, people, you know, I just want to document this and catch a cute moment. So
it's called street photography. Yeah. Look it up.
But like, you know, that's my approach to a lot of things. Like, I can't come back empty handed because the people need it. But I'm not in the newspaper world anymore, so I can in some ways. But... That's a slice of my thought process.
He comes back empty-handed, and we put this show together with a bunch of whatever.
It's a lot of my spoken word prose.
Yeah, Gavin, we're spitballing the news here. Anyway, Gavin, go ahead. Phone in those credits.
Put the phone credit down.
Empty-handed. Here we go.
It's empty-handed, folks. But yes, Andrew, thank you for calling us back. You can be like Andrew and leave us a message at 803-563-7169. We want to know about your experience at the polls or what you're doing for the holiday season. It's here. I think it's going to get colder soon at some point. I don't know. Global warming, you tell me. But thanks as always for listening. You can show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or give us a shout at 803-563-7169. You can stay up to date with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
It's a big city.
I'm a minder.